Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Tuesday, the 12th of January, 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. And this is episode 23 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to have a look at the way vitamins are marketed these days. Can they really make you extra energetic, super smart, and healthier than healthy? Well, that's what we're going to try to find out. Then, in our movie review section, we'll have a look at the new British film, An Education. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. All right, let's get into our LGBT news roundup for the last week or so. Let's start with the good news, which this week comes from Portugal, where last Friday, January the 8th, the Portuguese Parliament voted 125-99 in favour of a bill opening up civil marriage to same-sex couples. LGBT rights campaigners applauded from the galleries inside Parliament and then celebrated outside the building and ate a symbolic wedding cake. The bill now moves to the office of Portugal's conservative president, Aníbal Cavaco Silva, to be ratified or vetoed. It's expected that he will sign the bill into law, but even if he vetoes it, that veto can then be overturned by the Parliament. So it looks as if nothing can stand in the way now of Portugal becoming the next country in the world to introduce same-sex marriage. If the president does approve the bill on schedule, we should be seeing the first same-sex marriages being performed there by April, just a month before Pope Benedictus XVI is due to visit Portugal on an official visit. Frankly, I couldn't think of a better welcoming present for the Holy Father. The only slight dark cloud in all this is that some smaller parties had also introduced provisions to allow same-sex couples to adopt children, but these were rejected by the Parliament, unfortunately. So it looks like we've got same-sex marriage in Portugal now, but adoption will have to wait a little while longer. Now let's move on to less pleasant news, and while politicians in Portugal have been moving with the times, politicians in the US state of New Jersey have been making a pathetic attempt to resist the tide of history. And last Thursday, January 7th, the New Jersey Senate voted 20-14 against allowing same-sex couples to marry. So there was a lot of disappointment amongst LGBT activists there, particularly because the nasty right-wing Republican Chris Christie takes office as governor there next week. So last Thursday's vote was essentially the last chance we'll see for a number of years to get same-sex marriage introduced in New Jersey through the legislature. However, the fact that the legislative route is now blocked doesn't mean that same-sex marriage couldn't come into force through a judicial ruling. And immediately following the disappointing Senate vote last week, the human rights NGO Lambda Legal announced plans to begin legal proceedings to get same-sex marriage that way. And there is some hope here. New Jersey has had civil unions for same-sex couples for a number of years now. And the reason it introduced civil unions was because of a New Jersey Supreme Court ruling back in 2006 that held that it was unconstitutional to give same-sex couples fewer rights than opposite-sex couples. The legislature thought that civil unions would be enough to satisfy that court decision, but Lambda Legal will argue that civil unions are not enough and only full civil marriage will ensure full equality. So good luck, Lambda Legal. We certainly hope you win, and soon. And just one observation here, listener. If you listened to last week's episode of Reality Check, in which I made my predictions for 2010, well, I predicted that Portugal would get same-sex marriage this year, but New Jersey wouldn't. So far, it looks like I'm getting pretty good at this prediction racket. And I've actually heard from unconfirmed sources that John Howard, Tony Blair, George W., and Sylvia Brown are all starting to get a little bit nervous, as well they should, given what I predicted about them. Anyway, let's move now to our next item for today, which is more bad news, this time from Australia. Well, what more could you expect from our great island continent these days? And the disappointment this time round comes from New South Wales, where the government decided last week against opening up adoption rights to same-sex couples. A bipartisan parliamentary inquiry had recommended that allowing same-sex couples to adopt would be in the best interests of children. However, the New South Wales government said there was not enough evidence of support for the change. In other words, they were frightened off by some right-wing religious lobby groups and decided to put votes ahead of the best interests of children. What charming people they are. I predict, as do a lot of people, that the New South Wales Labor government is going to be destroyed at elections early next year. So one would hope that they could at least do something nice and just and historic before they get booted out of office, rather than just being nasty until the bitter end. Oh well, human beings never cease to find new ways to disappoint us here on Reality Check. And finally, and just briefly, a very important legal case, known officially as Perry versus Schwarzenegger, got underway in a federal court in San Francisco, California yesterday, Monday, January 11th. This is a constitutional case being brought by two very high-profile lawyers, Ted Olson and David Boies. And effectively, they're going to be arguing not just that the Proposition 8 referendum in California in 2008 should be overturned to allow same-sex marriage there, but that, in fact, the right for same-sex couples to marry is mandated by the United States Constitution throughout the entire country. So this case will most likely go all the way to the US Supreme Court, although it will probably take a couple of years to get there, and could turn out to be one of the most historic and important civil rights cases in US history. And if you're interested, you might be able to watch it on YouTube, although that still hasn't been decided yet. Now, some commentators are arguing that this case is a very high-risk gamble, and that it could backfire really badly depending on what the Supreme Court decides. I certainly hope it won't turn out badly, but be assured, dear listener, that here on Reality Check, we will keep you updated on any developments in this case as they occur. Okay, that's all our LGBT news for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we come back, we'll begin our skeptical analysis of vitamins. Should you be spending your hard-earned money on products like vitamin-enhanced water? Well, stay tuned and you'll find out here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Made in Melbourne for the world. Joy 94.9.
Over 200 volunteers bring you joy every week. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Sálvame by Mexican pop supergroup RBD, or in English, RBD. Okay, we now move into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And tonight, we're looking at some of the myths and misinformation surrounding vitamins and the way they're marketed. Are you feeling a little bit under the weather today? Maybe a bit tired, lacking energy, finding it hard to concentrate? Maybe you've got a bit of a headache or a runny nose? Yes? Well, sounds like you could do with some vitamins. And the more the better. I mean, everybody knows that vitamins are good for you. Just go down to your local supermarket or milk bar. You'll find all these energy drinks packed with vitamins, not to mention all the juices and yogurts and other food with added vitamins. And of course, we can't forget all those supermarket shelves devoted to little plastic jars of herbs and other supplements, including all kinds of wonderful combinations of vitamins. So vitamins must be some kind of wonder food, right? Well, the people who market them would certainly be happy to have you believe that. Now, while it's true that vitamins are essential to human life, in that we die if we don't eat them, a lot of food and drink marketing campaigns go a lot further than that in their claims and implications. They make a huge jump in logic and go from saying that the fact that we need vitamins to live, to be healthy, means that therefore the more vitamins you can get, the better. So you can then be even healthier than healthy. We can improve our immune system, enhance our brain function, raise our energy levels, etc., etc. We'll not only be super healthy, we'll be some kind of superhumans. Now, one particularly visible direction in which vitamin marketing has gone in the last few years is in the field of so-called enhanced waters. You know the ones? You've probably seen them in the supermarket or in vending machines. They use brand names like Vitamin Water, Nutrient Water, and Smart Water. And they play on all the misconceptions people have about vitamins making you somehow smarter and healthier than you already are. And there really is big money in it. For example, the Vitamin Water line of drinks was founded back in 1996 by one guy, J. Darius Bickoff, who came up with the idea of adding vitamins to mineral water to supposedly stop him catching a cold. In 2007, 11 years later, Bickoff sold his company to Coca-Cola for, get this, $4.1 billion. So it's now the Coca-Cola Corporation who's raking in the bucks on this wonder drink. So let's have a look at some of the names in the vitamin water range and notice the carefully chosen words the marketers have decided to use for each product to imply, but not state explicitly, that the drink will have a certain effect. There's Power C, with a mix of C and B vitamins. Then there's Focus, also with a mix of C and B vitamins. There's also Revive, also with C and B vitamins. And there's also Energy, with those C and B vitamins again, plus caffeine and guarana. So they're all pretty much the same, really, except they have different sounding names and come in a variety of pretty colours. Then we have the whole range of Nutrient Water and Spring Valley Smart Water, which are pretty much just Australian competitors for vitamin water, and which contain pretty much the same ingredients, with the same kinds of lovely names and colours. Nutrient Water has names like Energy, Immunity, Endurance, and Rehab. So all of them across all the brands are pretty much the same thing. They're just the basic three or four B vitamins, sugar and water, with sometimes a few other vitamins or herbs or caffeine thrown in. And they all rely on the widely held belief out there that vitamins just do amazing things for you. For example, a lot of people believe that taking a combination of B vitamins and vitamin C will perk you up. Of course, Barocca and a few other brands have been profiting from this idea for a long time. Now everyone else is getting in on the act as well, and making a lot of dollars from it, it seems. But is there any truth to all these explicit or implied claims about vitamins? Well, there's one way to find out. Talk to an expert. So that's exactly what I did. I decided to call up Professor Peter Clifton, an endocrinologist and expert in human nutrition in Adelaide, who's written a number of diet books published by the CSIRO, including The Total Wellbeing Diet. So let's have a listen right now to what the professor had to say. Joining me on the line now is Professor Peter Clifton. He's an endocrinologist at the Baker IDI Heart and Diabetes Research Institute in Adelaide. Professor Clifton, welcome to Reality Check.
Thank you very much.
Today we're talking about vitamins and particularly some of the misleading marketing out there about vitamins in certain food and drink products. They would lead us to believe that vitamins can make you extra healthy and increase your concentration and wake you up. So I'm just wondering, first, one commonly held belief out there about vitamins is that particular combinations of B and C vitamins in drinks or those tablets that you can put in water, the fizzy tablets, that those vitamins will wake you up or perk you up in the morning if you need a bit of a wake up. They kind of act as a stimulant like caffeine. I'm just wondering, is there any truth to that widely held belief?
None whatsoever. There's been no trials at all done with those kind of formulations. So there's been one trial done in people recovering from hangovers that suggested, and it was a small trial, that there may be some benefit. But in terms of perking you up, giving you energy, none whatsoever.
Okay, so how do these companies get away with it?
Well, they can obviously make whatever claims they like, and then it really depends on somebody complaining to the authorities and taking them to court. And I think food is regulated probably a little bit more tightly than sort of over-the-counter kind of preparations, so they fall into a more grey zone. So many of the complementary kind of medicines do make large amounts of claims that really have never been substantiated, and they tend to get away with it a bit more than mainstream foods do.
And do you know, is there some grain of truth to the idea, particularly around the B vitamins, to the idea that they perk you up and stimulate you like caffeine or something would?
No, I can't really imagine where that belief would have come from. I mean, certainly vitamins like thiamine, which is obviously in many of these preparations, is important in metabolizing carbohydrate. I guess it might be that there's a belief that, and I guess there's some observation really from kids that if you give them a glucose drink and increase their glucose, their ability to learn is improved. So that's the only way I can link improving carbohydrate metabolism and making you perform better might have arisen. But of course, there's no proof that giving somebody thiamine actually makes them think any better or perform any better. It's really only related to increasing glucose levels.
Okay, and that brings us to the other claim or kind of implied claim that a lot of these companies make is that not only will it wake you up, it will improve your concentration and your focus and your mental ability. Again, nothing to that?
No, no evidence at all. So there's been quite a few trials looking at cognitive function, which is really how your brain is performing, and mood with a wide variety of combinations of B12 and B6, not so many with B1, which is the thiamine. And there really is zero evidence that they do anything at all. So whether you're a normal middle-aged person or whether you've got sort of mild early dementia or later stages of dementia, it really has no effect at any of these stages. So although it's suggested that there may be a link between Alzheimer's and low levels of these vitamins, interventions where the vitamins don't really change your brain function at all.
And then another belief that is, I guess, perpetuated also by the sellers of vitamin supplements particularly, is that somehow, okay, maybe if you have a normal diet, you'll be healthy, but if you have extra vitamins, you'll be extra healthy. Is that true?
Not at all. In fact, there is some evidence, disputed, admittedly, that increasing your intake of some vitamins like beta-carotene or vitamin E may actually be associated with harm, so increase your death rate. The vitamin manufacturers will claim, oh, well, you know, they were tested in unhealthy populations and they're much more likely to die anyway and it's not true for the healthy population. And that's probably true. I mean, most of the published studies which have looked at the use of vitamin E and beta-carotene and vitamin C have been in people at risk of heart disease or risk of coronary disease or risk of lung cancer. And certainly it hasn't benefited them. And in some trials, three or four trials, the death rate from cancer and from cardiovascular disease has been increased, particularly with beta-carotene, but also in some studies with vitamin E. So not only are you not getting a benefit, you're possibly getting an adverse effect.
Right, okay. And I understand that even some vitamins, if you take too many of them, they can be toxic at certain levels. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Certainly there is an effect of high doses of B vitamins and damaging of the peripheral nerve, so peripheral neuropathy. So if you take large amounts of combinations of B vitamins, it's not all that common, but it's described that you can damage your peripheral nerves. So that's a really direct toxic effect of very high levels of B vitamins.
And I think vitamin A is one of the most
toxic.
Well,
vitamin A is actually very toxic, that's right. So if you overdose on that one, you know, so if you're an explorer running out of food and you eat polar bear livers or your husky dog livers, you can certainly die of vitamin A toxicity. So certainly it's not a good idea to consume large amounts of vitamin A, and I guess in reality most people don't. So you find vitamin A at normal healthy levels in multivites, so unless you're having hundreds of multivites a day, you're not likely to overdose on vitamin A. Whereas of course other vitamins which are much safer in large quantities like the beta carotene, vitamin E, you can have a thousandfold your daily need by taking high dose tablets.
Yes, because the supplements sometimes contain not just your recommended daily allowance but thousands of times
that's
that
right, yeah.
And what about the other vitamins? Are they toxic, C or D?
C is certainly not toxic. I mean, you know that Linus Pauling has been a great exponent of the power of vitamin C. So he's been, in his experiments, giving intravenous vitamin C at 3 to 4 to 5 grams a day, you know, and we need milligram levels,
right.
Low milligram levels. And it's not toxic. You just excrete it. You can actually get vitamin C stones formed because you've got so much in the urine. So that's the only...
Oh, like kidney stones?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
right.
The only toxic effect, you know, which are unusual because they're made of vitamin C instead of the usual calcium and phosphate.
Right.
And vitamin D, in theory, you can get toxic on that, but it's actually quite difficult, and that will put your blood calcium up if it's very high. But you really have to be having hundreds of thousands of units every day. So you can have an injection of 100,000 units and have that a couple of times a year, and that's absolutely fine. So it's only if you're taking hundreds of thousands of units every day that there's a possibility you may get vitamin D toxicity, but it's pretty unusual. But, you know, in the general kind of high-dose level, which is 1,000 units, even if you took four or five of those a day, you're not going to get any toxicity from that.
So it seems the bottom line is that as long as you are getting your recommended daily allowance, there is no benefit and possibly even a downside to going over the top of that.
In general, that's true. Now, there are a couple of very specific exceptions. One's folic acid, of course, so that women who are thinking about getting pregnant should be taking at least 400 milligram a day of folic acid, which is hard to do from food. So the best advice is to take a folic acid supplement. And even higher doses, like 800 milligram, are probably even more advisable, and that will actually prevent neural tube defects in the offspring. So these are spina bifida kind of conditions where the spinal cord is still open and damaged. And supplemental folate at the time of conception will reduce that by 30 or 40%. So that's one vitamin that's actually very, very important and has got a proven place. And the other one is a combination of vitamin D and calcium, which together have been shown to increase bone density and to reduce fractures and to reduce falls. So apart from those two examples, there really are no other clear indications for increasing your intake of vitamins and minerals or even needing to take a multivite every day.
Right, because the average person in the developed world would most likely get all their vitamin needs in the food that they eat.
Absolutely. So it's pretty unusual. You have to have a very unusual diet to be getting deficient in any of those. Now, obviously, when you're on a weight loss diet that's severely restricted in the food quantity and quality, there is a chance that you'll be running short on certain things. You know, so if you've got an adjustable gastric band, it's actually hard to eat meat, and your iron may well fall. So there is a place in those circumstances for replacing iron. And obviously, premenopausal women that are losing iron every month, they're likely to have or at risk of getting subnormal iron stores if they don't eat much in the way of meat. So there's another circumstance in which a mineral may be required. But you need to actually test to see whether you're low on iron and then specifically take iron for that purpose.
So it would really only be people in specific situations, pregnant women, maybe the elderly in danger of getting osteoporosis or people who might be anemic who really need certain
That's
supplements.
Right. Yeah.
All right. And just a final comment. How do you feel about the way you see vitamins marketed all around you in the supermarkets and everywhere you go?
Well, I think it's true of all the complementary medicines. I mean, people are spending huge sums of money, billions of dollars a year. And I think, you know, 50% of the population are taking a supplement of some kind, and they're really wasting their money. So I think the TGA, which controls the sale and the circumstances around which they're sold, need to be a little bit more aggressive in controlling the claims. Now, of course, most multivite tablets don't really have any outrageous claims on them. They just basically, it's a multivite, and they say what they contain. So it's really more in the advertising associated with some particular combinations of vitamins and minerals that need more scrutiny. So I think the average one on the supermarket in general don't make too outrageous claims for them, I mean, apart from saying men's health and women's health, but they're the most, I guess, the weakest level of claim they're making rather than some outrageous claims.
Right, yes. What about all this new fad, I can say, that sprung up in the last few years of the enhanced waters, the various brand names, vitamin water, nutrient water, smart water?
Yeah, I guess the claims are all by implication in terms of saying smart water implies that you're going to be better off drinking this water than the other water. I think you'd have trouble challenging that kind of claim in court. And it's not making an outrageous claim, it's just saying it's a smarter water.
Right.
So, you know, it's a very fine line really between what is a claim and what is not a claim.
Yes, that's right. They really, they push the regulations to the limit, I reckon.
That's right, yes.
Yep. Good to hear some direct advice from an expert who knows what they're talking about against all these misconceptions out there.
Well, it's a big market and there's a lot of vested interest. So every time a negative vitamin study comes out, you know, the vitamin complementary medicine lobby goes into frenzied overdrive saying how flawed the study is and how the population is not typical and how there's all sorts of reasons for it's wrong. But there's really no positive studies apart from the specific areas I mentioned that show there is a need for any vitamin or mineral.
Yes, but it's all in the marketing, and it certainly works. I just did a straw poll around the studio here, and everyone I asked believed that vitamin B wakes you up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the placebo effect is strong, and if you believe it strong enough, when you have your Barocca in the morning, you probably do feel better.
Yeah.
Because you believe it was going to.
Yeah, that's true.
That's very powerful.
Yep, it is. Okay, Professor Clifton, any final words from you?
No, I think the population would be much better off spending their money on high-quality seafood and high-quality cheeses and high-quality fruit and vegetable rather than tablets.
Yes, I think I'd agree with you there. All right, Professor Clifton, thank you very much for joining us here on Reality Check.
It's a pleasure.
So there you have it, dear listener, an expert in human nutrition and biochemistry who says that all those marketing claims about vitamins are actually not supported by scientific evidence in any way. Extra vitamins don't, in fact, make you extra healthy. It's probably better to think of your body as something like a car. Once you've filled the petrol tank, putting in more petrol won't make the car go faster. You'll just pay more, and the excess will just overflow and run down the side of the vehicle onto the ground. Not a very smart way to spend your money. Oh, and by the way, before some of the people here at Joy, on whom I conducted my straw poll, come in and start throwing pencils at me, I should clarify that the question I asked them was whether they felt that it was a widely held belief in the community that B vitamins can perk you up, not that they themselves believed that. And they didn't believe it themselves, of course, because here at Joy, we're all much too smart to fall for some silly marketing gimmick like that. Now, maybe the thing that most annoys me about all this vitamin marketing and vitamin drinks is that by adding the word vitamin somewhere on their label or in their brand name, they're implying that their product has vitamins as opposed to the other products that don't. And you need to choose their product to get your vitamins. They seem to be hoping that everyone will just forget that for the last, million years or so, humans got all the vitamins they needed from, what do you know? From food. Yes, dear listener, believe it or not, food contains vitamins. Yes, good old food. You know, fruits, vegetables, dairy products, those things that you eat. Radical idea, I know. But why drink plain old fruit juice when you can now have enhanced water? In fact, I have a great idea. Why don't we get a whole pile of yummy, nutritious fruits, maybe some oranges and pineapples and mangoes and melons, and throw in some strawberries and blueberries and bananas and kiwi fruit, and let's blend them into a delicious drink packed with vitamins and minerals and fiber and sugars. And then we'll take out all the fiber and all the sugars and all the vitamins and minerals and folic acid and all the other nutritious and important substances found in fruits, until we've just got pure water left. And then we'll throw back in a few of the vitamins we took out, but not all of them, and in smaller quantities than what they were originally, and then we'll just add some sugar and colour and sell it at a premium price as health-giving enhanced water. I mean, you're really going to choose fruit juice over our modern miracle food? Seriously? Fruit that's been around for about 100 million years, literally? I mean, please, that's just so passé. Now, let me give you a couple of hard figures that show how absurd these marketing campaigns are. In a 500 milliliter bottle of vitamin water, Power C, you'll find 33 milligrams of vitamin C. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? 33 milligrams, that's just over half of the recommended daily intake. However, in a 500 milliliter bottle of orange juice, you'll find about 250 milligrams of vitamin C. That's about 8 times more than the vitamin water. And yet, it's the vitamin water that's being marketed as the high vitamin product. Now you see why I get so exasperated at these ridiculous and misleading marketing methods? And all these enhanced water brands have actually come under severe criticism from nutritionists, dentists, and consumer groups, particularly for their high sugar and caffeine content and their extremely misleading labeling and marketing. In 2008, the consumer advocate group, Choice, actually lodged a formal complaint with the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission. Unfortunately, though, the commission rejected that complaint and found that consumers should be able to tell from the label as well as from the taste, smell, and vivid colour of the drink that it is high in sugar and not a health product. Yeah, right. A pathetic decision, in my opinion. Now, before we get into another song, if you have any questions or comments about what we've covered on the show, or maybe a topic you'd like us to cover, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony, that's T-O-N-Y, at gmail.com. You can also visit our webpage if you like, that's at realitycheckonline.net. All right, let's listen to our final song for today, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
Hi, I'm Chaka Khan, and you're listening to Joy, Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au, and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. And the song you just heard there was Reality Is You by Japanese pop star Kawai Miwako from the soundtrack to the Peter Greenaway movie The Pillow Book. And speaking of movies, let's get into the movie review now here on Reality Check. And the movie up for review this week is An Education, a new British film made by Danish director Lonnie Scherfig. And this movie is getting quite a lot of Oscar buzz these days, particularly for the performance of its young protagonist, Carrie Mulligan. She's being touted by some critics as the new Audrey Hepburn. In An Education, Carrie Mulligan, who's actually 24 years old, plays the part of 16-year-old Jenny, studying for her A-level exams so she can get into Oxford University. The year is 1961, and Jenny is living with her very protective middle-class parents in the London suburb of Twickenham. One day, Jenny meets an older man, David, played by Peter Sarsgaard, and he rapidly seduces her and shows her a whole other enticing world. David makes a lot of money, it seems, and drives a sports car, and has rich, glamorous friends, Danny and Helen. They go out together to classical music concerts and posh nightclubs, and to the theatre and to see foreign films. It's everything Jenny ever dreamed of. David even takes her on a romantic getaway to Paris. Eventually, David asks her to marry him, and Jenny is faced with a serious dilemma. Should she accept and continue to live a glamorous life with David, or should she say no and stay at home, finish her A-levels, and then go to Oxford to read English, and then become either a schoolteacher or a civil servant, the only two occupations open to women at that time, at least according to the script of the movie. It's an interesting choice she faces, and one that could have made for a really interesting movie. But unfortunately, An Education has some serious flaws, in my opinion, that make the movie less interesting than it could have been. Let me explain what I mean. The first problem is the plot, because the dilemma that Jenny faces is not really as interesting as I've made out. It turns out that her glamorous new friends are really not as enticing as they appear to be. They're actually not very smart, particularly Helen, portrayed as a dumb blonde, and they're also petty criminals and con artists. So it ends up that the main cause of concern for the audience is, when is Jenny going to wake up and realize that her new friends are really no good for her? Which is a much less interesting question than what the film could have been if it had really explored a more serious life choice that Jenny had to make. In an alternate script, instead of being dumb and dodgy, her new friends could have just been glamorous and rich from old family money. And not dumb, but just not interested in academic subjects, maybe with other interests like fashion or photography or something. Then Jenny would have faced a much more interesting choice. Should she continue the path of all those years of study and books and reading and being a student with little income? Or should she have gone straight to an exciting life with no financial worries and able to indulge all her passions? Then the question would be, why work hard and study when you can just have fun instead? Why indeed? Are there good reasons to follow the academic path? I think there are, but they weren't really dealt with much in the film. Maybe that's partly because it's based on the real-life memoir of Lynn Barber, so they had to stick to what really happened. The other annoying thing about An Education is the way it's directed by Lonnie Scherfig and the corny dialogue written by British novelist Nick Hornby. A lot of things were over-explained and just portrayed in really obvious ways. This is a middle-class family. Let's make that very clear with some cliched dialogue reflecting middle-class values. Oh, and this blonde, glamorous girl is supposed to be dumb, so let's give her some really ignorant things to say so that everyone knows she's dumb. So, An Education certainly doesn't win points for subtlety in direction or dialogue, in my opinion. And finally, the other thing that I found slightly off-putting about the movie was what I reckon was the miscasting of Peter Sarsgaard in the role of David and Alfred Molina as Jenny's father. Peter Sarsgaard gives an impenetrable performance that I just couldn't buy into. And the role of Jenny's dad should have been a wiry, uptight, middle-class disciplinarian. Instead, Alfred Molina looks like a fat Sicilian padrino. And because of that over-the-top direction and artificial dialogue, he also gets some of the lines that most made me cringe. But having said all that, I didn't really dislike An Education. I was just a bit disappointed by it, that's all. It's a perfectly acceptable choice next time you head to the cinema, especially given that these days there's really not much else on. And it'll probably be remembered as the film that launched Carey Mulligan's career, so maybe worth checking out just for that. And that brings us to the end of the 23rd episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 10 o'clock next Tuesday for episode 24. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.